On this week's Our Beer Could Be Your Life, we get to sit down with Ryan Agate, aka Ryan the Terrible, who, spoiler alert, is not terrible and is actually a super nice guy. Ryan was the longtime booker of O'Brien's in Austin, and while he will no longer be managing the calendar on a day-to-day basis, he will be booking shows throughout the year and basically now just gets to book all the shows he really loves to book, so I think it's going to be good for him. Joe, how you doing today?
I'm good, buddy. I really enjoyed talking to Ryan. He has had an outsized impact in my life just for all the shows that he's booked that I've gone to and never got a chance to meet him before chatting with him. So he was really a pleasure. And I really enjoyed having to drink Genesee Cream Ale, which was quite tasty. How are you doing, Dennis?
I'm doing pretty good. How you guys been?
We're all right.
Nice. Good kickback. Good. How about you? That's why we have you here.
Dennis, what are you drinking over there that you're reading the label of and ignoring the flow of our intro?
This is why I'm not on the podcast, guys. I'm drinking one of our own, a new co-pilot called Leopold. It's a Polmaltave Pivo. I'm sure I pronounced that incorrectly. But it's good. It's a Czech style lager. It's malty, a little sweet. It's a little amber in color. It's nice.
Yeah, I think that means half dark or half black or something like that. So it kind of denotes that in between pale lager and dark beer. So
I would say that is this. Yeah. What are you guys drinking?
I got some more Jenny Cream Ales. It only comes in a 30 rack, so I'm basically drinking it, you know, for a week.
Nice.
I will say that Ryan did text me after our interview and say that he loves that beer you're drinking, because I had dropped off a case of mixed beer, and he was like, this beer is up my alley. But not enough for him to drive to Framingham. He just wants us to sell it in Malden, which isn't happening.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of, you know, your guys' responsibility, I guess. Well, it's a co-pilot, so we're not selling it anywhere other than the brewery, so
right. That's why it's not our problem.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But, well, it's definitely not my problem, so
I feel like it's gonna be my problem because he's just gonna ask me to bring him a four pack, so
sounds about right.
I've got a previous podcast guest, Mr. Kaderi, brought over a Salem lager from Notch, which is, I don't really know stylistically where this wants to fall, but it's a really tasty lager. And it kind of fits our lagery theme. We are a very lager heavy podcast, obviously. Mm. But I really like this beer. And they're opening a spot in Brighton sometime soon, which is much closer than Salem, which I will visit and likely enjoy.
Nice.
And what have you guys been listening to? I mean, we talked a lot of with Ryan about local bands, and it's gotten me working on our upcoming playlist to share, inspired by this episode. One of the bands that we didn't talk about that I picked up the LP of recently was Hoag. I don't know how to pronounce it, Matt. Help.
It is Hoag.
Hoag. And I really like, I think it's something the cowboy. I'm going to blank on this record name.
Dr. Cowboy.
That's it. So I found that record the other day. And it's real tasty, and I enjoyed it.
They were one of my favorite Boston bands. Matt Parrish, who was the singer, guitar player, was just like, he's so weirdly awesome. Like, all those songs are kind of awkward and kind of great and just have such weird little bits to them that just mesh together so well. I can't explain it. You just, like, got to listen to that and experience the weird time changes and little bloops and blips and stuff that, yeah. I think his name is Tyler, the guy who played keyboard, put in there and stuff. I don't know. That was one of my favorite records. I love that record.
Nice. I've been listening to, we're going to keep it on at the local level. I've been listening to the new release from the Hypnosonics, Mark Sandman's other band. I'm a huge fan of Morphine, and it was really cool to like hear something, you know, it's definitely Mark Sandman, right? But it's a little different than the Morphine. Really, really cool album that they put up.
like a looser vibe, right? It feels like a yeah. little bit like, I don't know. It feels like there's less expectation to it. And they're just kind of finding licks that they like and kind of sitting in with them for a while. I've liked it as well. It's still moody because, as you yeah. said, it's Mark Sandman. So it's still like, got his vibes all over it. But yeah, I agree. That's a good one. That had been in rotation until it was replaced with something else.
That's how that happens.
That's how it happens, man. Yeah. How about you, Oz?
Well, I know we have an upcoming guest who mentioned the band Mission of Burma as one of their influences. And I went back and listened to a lot of the Burma catalog. But what's the Obliterati is just so good and I really like it because it's a band that went away for 20 years ago and put out On Off On or Off On On, I forget which one it is. And that record was fine. It was a fine record, but like, it was clearly a band that was like finding themselves again. Like, you know, they hadn't worked together in forever and then just was like, all right, let's put out what I think is their best record. And they like, they kept, I'm glad they didn't give up. I'm glad they were like, this record is good, but we can do better. And they came back and just like destroyed it.
Nice.
I remember seeing them touring. I guess it might have been one of their first shows back on the, I think it's On Off On because it's like them being on, then off, and then back on again. Tour.
I never thought about it that way, but that is actually pretty clever, Mission of Burma. You motherfuckers.
This very, very late sneaking 14-year-old joke that they put out there. Yeah, and they were one of the loudest bands that I've ever seen. And I, you know, listened to a lot of loud, aggressive music. And I think if you were to go through the record collection, it wouldn't stand out as the loudest thing. But between the three dudes on stage and then in our era, Bob Weston on tape loops and delays and effects and shit, they just really, they blew doors off. They were really, really impressive to see.
I actually want to go back a band or two and tell a random story, which is that there is a frat at MIT that does a steer roast every year. So it's like closed off. It's like in this like house and yard that is gated. And, you know, they throw this giant party. And one year they asked Hoag to play it. And I was just like, can I come, guys? And they're like, yeah, sure. And actually, I think Ryan the Terrible was there or like somehow was instrumental in me getting in there because I didn't know anybody in Hoag, but I was like, can you talk to somebody and just let me to go in there to see Hoag? And they played, there was just this giant cow carcass spinning. And sorry, Ryan, I know you're a vegetarian. This is fucking gross. Cause you're gonna listen to our intro before your podcast starts. Was absolute, just, you know, disgusting, just cow spinning. It's as big as you think it is. And Hoag played outdoors in the middle of, you know, what is effectively Central Square, and just for an outdoor show was so, also so fucking loud, but in like the best way possible, where I'm like, where, how, why are they playing this thing where it's just like a bunch of frat bros, you know, walking around drinking PBR. I'm just, how is, like, I'm so glad that Hoag gets to do this random experience, but also like, this is fucking stupid.
You know, I've had a lot of like conflicting feelings about our art scene in Boston over the years, because I feel like we've lost a lot of great bands and priced out a lot of great bands. But I think talking to Ryan reminded me that there are a lot of great local musicians. And frankly, the list that he gave us, and it wasn't really a list that he gave us, I guess, as he was name checking bands and shows, I was like, man, I haven't listened to like over half of these. And these are all great local artists I get to discover now and get to learn some more about. So the fact that like Ryan is so involved and so plugged in and so ready to boost other people up, you know, it doesn't surprise me necessarily, but it renews my faith that this is a city that can have that type of cultural and artistic impact, especially in loud rock music, which is kind of, you know, what I care the most about, I guess, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I definitely think like if he's booking, you know, 30, 40 shows a year now, I'm going to know that those bands that he puts on that bill are going to be good, or at least they're worth checking out, because Ryan, you know, he isn't filling up a calendar 355 days a year now. He's booking shows that he wants to book. And nothing against filling up, you know, those bands filled up. I'm one of those bands that fill up the calendar, and trust me, I suck. But I know that that curated list is going to be, you know, it's going to be worth checking out, even if I don't get to go to that show for whatever reason.
You're saying it's an all killer, no filler situation. And then you also put yourself in the filler, which, I mean, I can't confirm or deny. I'm saying you should be at some of those shows, playing some of those shows as well, sir.
Hope Pool House?
We need some Pool House in our lives.
I hope so. It would be a lot of fun.
All right. Well, I think this conversation is super fun, especially if you haven't given much thought to how these bands start playing shows, which many people haven't thought about. Like, when you go to a show, what all the work that goes into it. Ryan's going to tell you. What a lovely chap.
He's a fantastic guy. And we do get to talk a little bit about what it takes to, or why he starts booking shows and what really matters when it comes to booking shows. So
I did forget to tell, I wanted to tell my one story of when I was like 15 and tried to book my first show at the Knights of Columbus in Walpole. And then during load-in, my band was headlining. During load-in, I fake moshed and kicked a hole in the wall. There was nobody there. I was just like, look. And then I had to pay for it. And it was just a whole thing. And I was like, why would people do this? Thanks, Ryan, for picking up slack for everyone. We appreciate you.
Thanks, Ryan. Enjoy listening to what he has to say. Breaking the mold. Oh, it started, but it doesn't matter. This is Dennis's job to make it work.
So true.
You know,
I love you, Dennis.
Cream Ale holds like a, specifically Genesee Cream Ale holds like a special place in my heart. Was born and, you know, came up loving what some people call shit beers. I call beer flavored beers, the Schlitzes, the PBRs, the Narragansetts, the Old Milwaukee, the Milwaukee's Best. And then on a someone introduced me to Genesee. I think I was like 25. I was like, this is somehow better tasting than all of those other beer flavored beers. And we met a kid. Do we go into like the story, like of how?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's kick it off.
So like me and a bunch of my idiot friends found out that Lemuria was doing a record release show in Buffalo, New York. And we'd never been to Buffalo, New York. So on a wing and a prayer, we hopped in a car and drove to Buffalo for the show. And a friend of ours was like, we know a guy who will let you stay at his house. But we didn't know who this guy was. We didn't have cell phones or numbers or anything. But we pull into Buffalo and go to the venue Mohawk Place, which still exists to this day in a different form. But it's a beautiful venue. If you haven't been, I recommend it. And they had like $2 Genesees. Every other beer was like $3. We were like, well, we're drinking Genesee Cream Ales all night.
Naturally.
And it's great. It's drinkable. It's smooth. And during this whole night of us doing endless amounts of damage to our livers with Genesee and whiskey shots with strangers, our friend Adam started getting a fight with this guy because he was dancing too enthusiastically. but they both were wearing the same band t-shirt. So I intervened and was like, hey, you guys like the Can Kickers. We should be friends instead of being, you know, argumentative with each other. And it turned out that that was the kid we were staying with.
Fantastic.
His name was Jim. He was in the band Louisiana Purchase. They lived in a funeral home in Buffalo. And we stayed at a funeral home and had a lot of fun antics while, I mean, we bought a case of Genesee for the way home and just basically drank until the sun came up. And then we rode old-timey bikes the next morning in the parking lot of a funeral home that all these kids lived in. It was quite an introduction to Genesee as a beer.
I mean, you're speaking to the communal power of shitty good beer right there. So that's fantastic.
Anybody can drink it. Everybody kind of likes it. So like it's an equalizer, I would think.
I remember being in upstate New York and somebody, I don't remember if it was because I wasn't of age to go in or didn't have an ID or something, but I remember somebody was going to buy us beer. And so I handed them a $20 bill and they're like, is Jenny okay? And I was like, sure. And he's like, well, how much do you want? I was like, well, I'll have a 30 rack. He's like, well, do you want one 30 rack or two 30 racks? I was like, for $20? Like, yeah, they're like $8.99. Holy shit.
Yeah, I remember when I went to Virginia to Blacksburg to hang out with friends, the Kroger's, it was $9.99 for a Jenny 30 rack. And we're like, it's going to be a week. Let's do this.
When beer is cheaper than soda, you're in for a good time. And that's, I've always thought that.
So what is the insider's beer of choice at, say, an O'Brien's Club in Alston, Massachusetts? What are the people who know order?
Well, I think it's different depending on what your job is. As the when I was the booker and promoter at O'Brien's or doing shows, I started drinking Narragansett Tall Boys, PBR Tall Boys. You can't sustain yourself over like 9 hours, 6 hours. So I switched to the Miller Lite. And that was the way that I got through it, supplementing it with like Notch session pills.
So 12 ounce beers.
Yeah.
Wrong answer. The answer is Coors Banquets. And that.
Well, then if you're drinking and you're playing a show, it's either a Coors Banquet or they had Allagash on tap. I think the cheapest you could get it anywhere else. So the Allagash White, Coors Banquet, those are the way most people drink at OB's.
And the way that hopefully people will drink at OB's again sometime soon.
Sometime soon. I mean, they're probably going to open. Now I stepped down from the booking over the summer, as I think most people know, Daniel Carswell, who's also been a guest in your podcast, will be taking over those booking duties. But they will be open for backyard patio hangs where you can buy beer, have burgers, hot dogs, veggie burgers, as soon as the weather gets nice enough. And then they're hoping to start shows, when they get the thumbs up from, I think it's August. When the government...
I've heard August 1st is when like everything is gonna be fair game.
So we'll see. I've already got a show that I'm bringing to the calendar, hopefully early August. It's all up in the air, but we'll see.
Does stepping down as the daily calendar manager just let you to book like all your favorite people now? You just get to like focus on, you know, booking Witches with Dicks 30 times a year or something.
Yeah, I did that already. But I think it's just more about a balance of life. The amount of times that I spent at OB's as the booker, wonderful, but like having a family, like I can't spend 3 nights a week until 2 a.m. and get up and do, you know, my day job and take care of the kids. So it's just more about finding a balance. So going back to like the pre O'Brien's booking days where I do like 30 or 40 shows a year, probably somewhere around 20 is the goal to keep myself sane. Because I've never, like, since I was a 15-year-old kid, I've never not booked shows. So I don't know. This year has been really weird. But we've gotten through it. So once we get to do it again, I hope we still have a lot of fun. I think we will. I think it'll be, like, crazier on the other side of this after a year of not doing it.
I think there's going to be a big pent-up, you know, rage factor coming out of this whole thing. I'm chomping at the bit. I can't wait to go to a show. I'm going to like beat people up at a Bell and Sebastian show or something. I'm just going to be so psyched up.
Yeah, you're just bringing the circle of death no matter the style of music. That's fine. You're just going to be at some brewery and some guy's going to be playing acoustic guitar. You're going to be like, right here. This is my circle. Don't come into it.
Well, so now you guys, I mean, work at breweries, go to brewery shows. What do you feel about the acoustic shows at the breweries? Now I'm asking you the question.
What we're here for, Joe, you want to?
I was going to demur that question because I don't want to be rude to anybody who's playing music.
That's why I deferred it to Joe.
I don't. I think it's really a skill to be able to stand with an instrument in front of a crowd of people and just go for it. Right. I don't like acoustic covers of songs I already know very much. And I don't really like acoustic guitar music by itself usually. So I'm usually kind of not the audience for that personally.
Got it. Yeah.
I also like hate just how out of place it usually feels. Like it's Friday and I just want to hang and talk to the people that I like, you know, just finally get to see. And then some guys blasting like the shittiest, you know, Wonderwall cover that you're like, why is this so loud? Like, why does it feel like he's standing against my face and singing into me? Like, just,
yeah. I at least want that Champagne Supernova. Like, give me the more interesting of the two most popular Oasis songs.
What about Don't Look
Don't Look Back in Anger?
Okay, I mean, there we go.
Thanks, Ryan.
I couldn't think of that one in enough time to say it. For some reason, Champagne Supernova came out.
Bert from Winter Hill Brewing Company, when he was in bands and did solo shows, used to do an absolutely heart-wrenching cover of Champagne Supernova. When I say heart-wrenching, it was just, it sucks that he just doesn't do it anymore, because the whole room would be like, are you kidding me? This guy with that voice is doing that song? And instant sing-along every time he would play it. And he hated it. I think he fucking hated doing it, but we made him every time he played, which is probably why he quit playing music.
It's an accomplishment right there. Drive somebody out.
He's going to yell at me and say, it was Don't Look Back in Anger, but in my head, it was Champagne Supernova.
Well, it's going to live in mystery, though. We will find out from Bert. Bert will let us know.
Tell
us
if we're wrong. Yeah.
We'll bring him on the pod just for that. We have one question for you.
So I have a question as somebody. I booked a show when I was 15 or 16. It did not go well. I tried again when I was like 22. Did not go well. And in both cases, the things that went wrong were so like wacky that I was just like, this is not for me. Like, I should be not the lead singer of a band. I should just be in a band and that should be it. So I'm curious, you said you've been doing this since you were 15 years old. What was the inroads for it for you, and how have you kept it going? I'm assuming you're a little bit older than 15 at this point, maybe 20, 22.
I'm 22 years old. I turned 40 in a month, which is wild.
Oh, I thought we were going to stick to the canon that everyone is 21 on this podcast.
Oh yeah, we're 21 years old. It's only been 6 years booking shows.
Young kids.
I was in a real shitty band in high school and nobody wanted to do shows with us because we were the band that would clear rooms. Like, we didn't know how to play our instruments, really bad. And so I would start booking shows, and through that met some really interesting people. I mean, those ones early on went really shittily. You're booking at a church and they see a bunch of Mohawked punks show up and they lock the doors and tell you you can't come in. It's a food drive. Everyone's got cans of food. Now they're throwing it at the church. What do you do? I don't know. But I got to work with a lot of really interesting bands really young in Manchester, New Hampshire, Nashua, New Hampshire. And then through that, met a bunch of kids in Lawrence Mill shows, Gloucester Art Space shows, and just was like, hey, I can do this. And then just did it. So a lot of shows, all ages and art space, and, you know, through my early 20s. When I moved to Boston, I went to a place called The Real Bar in Alston, which is now was Deep Elm. Now it's Lone Star. And they had a DJ who was packing up at 9:30 at night. And I was wasted out of my mind from going to a wine party, which is a thing I'd never do again.
Ryan did air quotes for everyone that's listening, which is the only people that are hearing this.
Oh, I was like, I can get people in your bar. And he was, you know, I'm wasted. No one believes the wasted guy who says that. So I went back the next day and was like, hey, I was that drunk guy last night. I can get people in your bar. He was like, cool, pack it next Friday. And I booked a show and it sold out. I mean, The Real Bar held like 32 people. It wasn't hard to sell it out. And then they were like, cool, you want to do it again next Friday? And then next Friday and then next. And then I just kept doing it, kept packing the place. And then Carl, who was at Great Scott and O'Brien's, let me start booking O'Brien's 2005, and the rest is history. I booked there until 2012 when I became the booker and just recently stepped down. I just think it's fun. I like watching bands and screaming and sweating and spilling beer on my friends. And I love watching bands go from the start to like find their footing and find their place. And I've seen so many bands struggle to find that place and need someone to support them and just be like, I see what you're doing and I love it. Keep it up. Or like, don't listen to me. I'm just some guy who books bands, but like maybe try this thing that it looks like you're going for. And then when they find it and they realize it, I mean, it's as someone who can't sing or write or really play music, that to me is like what keeps me going.
I think that's a lie. I saw the last time you played live. It was amazing.
Oh, which one was that, Swimmer's Ear or Underage Drinking Party?
I think it was Swimmer's Ear. Was it which one were you wearing the red diaper playing drums?
That was Swimmer's Ear. They were like short running shorts. It wasn't a diaper. Yeah.
You looked like a big baby in a diaper. I mean, let's.
Oh yeah. And then in Underage Drinking Party, I just sang. Both of those bands were one band shows. I didn't have a headliner for a show, so I started a band. We had 6 practices. The set was 9 minutes. We played it twice. That was Swimmer's Ear. And then, no, Underage Drinking Party was drums. So it was Underage Drinking Party. Same thing. I didn't have a headliner, started a band. We thought we were going to do more shows, and then the guitar player moved to Canada. So we broke up. What are you going to do?
Classic rock and roll story.
Huh?
2 good band names you're sitting on there, too.
Oh, yeah. Swimmer's Ear was so good. It was a fake hardcore band. And they had like constant headache or like whatever. And I was like, oh, Swimmer's Ear. It's like a mildly difficult affliction. And then Under His Drinking Party, there was a party busted in Sandwich, Massachusetts. And the news headline was Underage Drinking Party in Sandwich. And I was like, that's a great band name. And Carl was like, I can't put that on the website, man. And then... because like I wanted to throw an Underage Drinking Party at O'Brien's, and he was like, no. So it was UDP on the website, which is fine. The flyers, I'll spell it out.
Censorship.
That is a band name for flyers. We just talked over each other, Oz. We can do better. We're a dozen episodes in now.
Seriously.
You say it. You say that smart thing that I talked over.
No. I just said censorship. That's all I said. It wasn't even good or funny.
I can never not think of the Mitch Hedberg joke where he's mumbling. And when he finally gets it across, he's like, that tree is far away.
I say that joke all the time. It's such a good joke.
It's excellent.
Like, in college, I would get drunk and talk exactly like Mitch Hedberg. That was like my slur because I listened to that record so often. And my friends were like, dude, you got to listen to a different thing when you go to bed. And I was like, I'll tell you later. Stupid.
I mean, Mitch Hedberg does have a pretty soothing bedtime voice.
True.
And the first record has those like groovy bass lines, kind of like doo doo, like the whole way through. So it's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, you fall asleep to jazz comedy, man.
That is correct. Art, maybe you know this, maybe you don't. I'm curious if 15-year-olds are doing today what you did when you were 15.
I think
booking art spaces.
I don't know if all the art spaces exist the way that they did. I don't know if the Knights of Columbus's allow them the same I guess freedom that we had. Shortly after, I mean, a lot of those places just stopped allowing punk shows because the kids would kids would destroy the space, or you know, you had the New Hampshire drunk punks who would show up and just like destroy every Knights of Columbus. All those kids were, I mean, I was drunk underage constantly at those things because I had a friend, dearly departed Joe Kelly. I would, you know, he would walk down the steps and just drop a Budweiser in front of me every time he went and got a beer. I never asked for it, but he always got me one. I don't know why. But I think that they're finding their own spaces to do their own things. And I think they're just doing the same shit that we did differently to suit their needs. They're also not all doing like, you know, fast raging hardcore bands. They're doing a different type of music that doesn't need one of those spaces. Maybe it's a basement or a garage or a YMCA or another community space that's allowing them to try something out. Or they're, you know, all the stuff that I heard about growing up in like San Francisco, where they would get generators on the it's the MBTA for us, but whatever they have out there at their T-stops, and they would just have shows that would last like 20 minutes because they knew the cops were going to come. I want to see kids do that. That's what I want to see. And I think after they're allowed autonomy in the world again, you're going to see some kids do some crazy cool shit because all that pent up creativity is going to explode out. I mean, I hope.
Yeah. Yeah, I also hope that.
I definitely hope that, you know, after all this, there's a lot of places left for people to do that. You know, I feel like we've lost a lot of smaller venues, which I know we're talking more about DIY spaces, but still, like, you know, those kids have to grow up to another space as well. And, you know, we're losing a good chunk of this art space, but also hopefully that some art spaces pop up because of that. This isn't a question. This is a ramble. I just realized.
I think you'll see things take the place of those spaces we lost, for better or for worse. Like, I love some of those spaces. Like, Once, we lost an amazing space in Once. And I hope that you see something pick up that slack. I don't know what it is. I know JJ's working on all kinds of stuff in the background. I don't know if you can hear my son climbing up the steps in the background either. I think you're going to see places bring art more forward in the communities. I think people during this especially realize how important that is to their community and to their well-being and their lives. I've always said, like, booking O'Brien's was great. There should be an O'Brien's in every neighborhood. Why isn't there a dedicated music venue for a small crowd of 70 to develop and grow in every neighborhood? There are some, and they have gatekeepers that might be more difficult, but, like, I'm in Malden, we don't have anything. It'd be nice if we had something. I don't know.
I've heard, and we've been talking to folks in Malden actually about wanting something similar and wanting to do something similar. But for me, it's not only just the size of the room, but it's like, maybe this is just because it's what I like, but like places for, like, you know, weird art to exist. And like Once was great for that. And I, you know, the idea of Once lives, the
absolutely.
Soundboard for Once is at Springdale right now, waiting for a new home. And that brings me back to the guy with the acoustic guitar in a bar, because in a brewery, because I'm like, you know, that's all well and good. And if that makes you happy, that's really exciting. But like, when I want some weirdo to shout at me, and I want to shout along with this weirdo, like, where does that live? And that's what I'd like to make sure still happens. Do whatever we can to make sure that those spaces exist. Again, not a question, just a statement.
Yeah, but
I think we all agree.
I think we all agree, and I think that there is a space for that. And I mean, as a person who's booked a lot of acoustic people at a show at a brewery when I was doing a lot of shows at Winter Hill, I saw a lot of indifferent people who, like, could have given a shit that there were people playing music next to them. And at the same time, I got to do some really weird out there stuff because they let me do really weird out there stuff. And I think about this now, a good close friend, Joey Sprinkles, who was this guy on tour who was like, I need a show. Can I do it at O'Brien's? I said, I don't have the date at O'Brien's, but I can do a matinee at Winter Hill Brewing Company. And this guy I've never met comes to Winter Hill, kind of a mild-mannered guy. He was at one point in Cloud Nothings, I should maybe say that, which is kind of a big deal. But he played, I want to say, like Sid Vicious meets Frank Sinatra, and not like the cover of My Way, but he had a keyboard and he sang these, like, he croons while playing like a distorted guitar, and they're very poppy and peppy, but the lyrics are like kind of dark and really weird and out there, and he's like moving and shaking. And no one at the brewery knew what the fuck to do with this guy. But at the same time, everybody was like, this is kind of cool, but I don't know what to make of it. And he was going to sleep in his van, which he had slept in every night of that tour. And I was like, I got a house with a bunch of records if you want to come back and like drink beer and like go through my record collection. And we stayed up probably till the sunrise, just like listening and going through records. And he was like, I haven't listened to this record since I was in high school. I said, that's like my favorite record still. But we made that bond, and he's come back a few times, and I sent him letters in the mail. And that's the, like, again, a ramble, but like art brings people together. Even like the stuff that you don't think, like, I don't know if I'm going to like it. I love that. And now I love him. And it's like this good relationship through his art.
I saw a video a couple years ago that a friend sent me, not somebody that's totally like in the music scene, but it was like a video of this guy, Mark, at a brewery in Florida doing these like crazy loop samples where he's like shouting at this brewery crowd and doing loops and all this crazy stuff. And the guy is Mark Rebelay, who just like sold out House of Blues.
Yeah, that guy's, yeah.
three nights this year. I'm like, in the course of that, you know, 2.5-3 years, that dude has gone from booking a brewery and just like shouting, "Let me in, I'm trying to fuck at strangers," to selling out House of Blues, like multiple performances. And like that's the pipeline you're talking about. That's, and hopefully Joey Sprinkles finds his way into that pipeline.
I think he does okay. He gets to create his cool art, put out a bunch of records. I took like a picture of I think it was my kid or like a record I was listening to, and his record was just in the background, and he was like, "Wow." I'm like, "I like your stuff, man." It's, I don't know. I like music. I celebrate. I listen to it a lot. We're in the process of moving. I don't know my record player. So like I'm without, and I'm very, makes me very anxious to not have music, because I've always had music on around me, and now it's a lot of silence, which not my favorite. But we also, again, have a 2.5-year-old just running around the house screaming 80% of the time.
Not really silence, then.
We can block that out a little.
You can usually drown that out with like a nice, you know, ska record just cranked up loud.
Matt, I'm trying this Ray Catcher.
Yeah, how is it?
That's nice. It's a nice beer.
Awesome. Glad to hear it.
Very summery. We're almost there.
It's almost there. It was warm enough out, even though it's raining. You know, for all the people that are listening to this and don't give a shit about what the daily weather is.
I mean, talking about the weather, classic small talk. Oz.
Yeah, let's, no, that's what people came here for.
This is what the weather was like in the past.
Someplace. So, Ryan, can I ask you a question that I've always wanted to ask every single booker that I've ever dealt with?
Yeah, absolutely.
How the hell do you put together a cohesive show? Because you seem to be the only, well, you and Carswell are the only people who know how to do this, apparently.
I would say there's a handful of other people who do a really good job.
There are, certainly. But I'm speaking in hyperbolic terms here.
I don't think you have to, would be my answer. And I sometimes try not to.
I think there's a difference between having different styles that play off each other well and just having, like, a metal band followed by like a girl doing Lana Del Rey covers followed by an acoustic guy.
Let's
end it, like, you know, which happens more. You, that happens all the time.
I have to tell people to trust my process, and I don't have a process so much as like I have intuition, and I like to think this will be, you know, in my head, if I was the audience goer, which 90%, you know, not 90, probably a third of the time I am, what do I want to see? How do I want to see this progress? And I put myself into those shoes and go, I think this would be interesting into that, and into that. And it's a crescendo or it's a build. I like to think, do you know the band Clever Girls? Everyone here know the band Clever Girls?
Yes.
I cannot recommend Clever Girls enough. And I've seen DJ go from a mild-mannered acoustic performer to being fronting one of the most badass rock and roll bands, I think, in New England's time. And one of the first times I did a show with them, I put them in the middle, and it was great, and it worked, but I hadn't seen the live show. And the live show, I mean, they are ass-kicking band. And so the next time I was like, I'm going to put you on last, but you have to trust me that we're going to build the right show around you, and it's going to explode when you take the stage. And they said, okay, we trust you. Let's do it. And that show was insane. We started with a quiet band, went to a louder band, brought it back down to like a milder band. And then they came out and tore the place apart. And it's about working together and figuring out what the audience wants to see and how your energy is. I failed it a ton of times. My friends in Brave Hands, I said, trust me, you're going to go great in this slot. And all the gear fell apart. The audience mostly left as soon as like the first guitar string broke. They played to almost nobody and their friends were all in town, and I beefed it. I probably should have put them on second or third. But sometimes it's just, there's a magic to the way to get the show to flow the right way and be cohesive in my head.
Yeah.
But also in the audience's head. I sound like a crazy person, I can tell, but there's like a, I don't know, there's like a nuance to it.
Well, you know, at least when I was a kid, I was making actual mixtapes, which became mix CDs, which became playlists, right? But you had the same kind of considerations, like, where do you want to take your listener?
Yep. You're telling
how do we want to like suck them in and get them the weird shit in the middle and then like seal it. Sounds like it's some similar type of thought process.
I mean, I also grew up making mixtapes for all my friends. Get a new record, hey guys, you got to hear this. You got to hear this new band. I'm going to throw it with some bands that you already know to like lure you in. And then, same thing with mix CDs in the college days. Napster was freaking dangerous. I don't know how many people here are going to agree with you. I just had everything at my fingertips for nothing.
Yeah, it coincided with the time of my life where I was getting into some really weird stuff. So like I wanted to have, you know, John Zorn's live performance with Painkiller from the Knitting Factory at a certain date. Like, why would sure, download it.
That sounds amazing. I had like every Kids of Whitney High live record. Like you can't get that stuff. It doesn't exist, but it existed on Napster.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of backlash against like digital music stuff, but like, you know, the first time I heard Fugazi was because of Napster. Like I was able to download that, be like, this band is great. And then I went out and bought shit. And I know that, you know, it doesn't translate and stuff, but like there is a role, especially as radio has turned to shit, that these digital music services like fill a void of like spreading new music. And like, you find out about it. And the real issue is just convincing people they need to go spend money on these bands that are making the art that they really like, and not just keep getting it for free.
Well, that's why I think like Bandcamp doing their Fridays is such a cool thing. And a lot of the bands that I've worked with, become friends with, they do so good on those, you know, days. And people wait. I'm going to buy that record that Friday. I love this band. I want to support them. And I think that support from music fans hasn't ever gone away. They want to figure out a way to support their favorite band, whether it's buying merch, going to a show, buying the record online, buying a physical copy. I mean, bands still tour with CDs and tapes, and people buy them, or else they wouldn't tour with them. But it's I think to have that, if you're touring with it, you want to make sure you have something that's accessible to anybody. If someone comes in and they have $3, you can sell them a tape. They got $5, you can get a CD. You got $10, you can get a t-shirt. $15, you get an LP. That means almost anybody who walks into any venue is going to be able to walk away with some of your merch. I think the cassettes, I think the resurgence is weird. I like it, but like inexpensive entry point into putting out your own music, and you can put a download code in it. So you don't have to listen to the tape, but you get the cool liner notes, you get the cover. And that's something a lot of kids, I think, who didn't experience, they grew up in the digital. Now they're getting a physical copy. They're enjoying that experience of having the liner notes, the lyrics. Maybe they're just going to download the music and never listen to the tape, but they have the rest of it, the rest of the package. And I think that works.
Yeah. Cassettes definitely feel like a trade me $5 for this thing that's going to go in a drawer. But like, I appreciate it's we get to exchange something and not just you hand me money.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's I think we've described it here before as a fungible token. Cause I, you know, like the last Bandcamp Friday, I bought a shirt from Choke Up. And in it came a Beached Boy tape that is pink and looks fantastic.
That record is also, the tape is also amazing.
I will listen to it. I still have it. It's just sitting in my dresser. I'm like, this looks really nice.
I put out Choke Up's first recording on my tape label that also only released one thing, which was the Choke Up.
And I still have that tape.
It's worth a lot of money.
No, my truck immediately ate it up when I put it in, like when I found it 10 years after you put it out. But I still have the like hard case tape of it.
Yeah, I mean, they were going on tour, needed something. I had some money. They weren't expensive. And I walked them to Nathan over at Bravo Pizza in Austin and was like, here's your tapes for tour, buddy. Have fun. And they came back and were like, we sold a bunch. And I had for a while, like all their Bandcamp, anybody who bought anything off of Bandcamp came to me and I would just like give it back to them. I was like, guys, too many people are buying this shit. You can't keep sending it to me. So we traded and now they of course own Bandcamp, chokeup.com or whatever.
I mean, you can't trust those guys.
Real, real shady folks in that Choke Up band. Couldn't say enough nice things about him, to be real. I mean, I've known Harley, Nathan, and James since they were like literal teenagers. So having seen them grow has been really rewarding. And that band.
I mean, you know, I love that band. I have the posters right there.
There you go. I saw you at those shows. I get goosebumps.
Sam's coming on in like 2 weeks. So, you know, future pod plug right there.
Right on.
I'm curious, you know, maybe Choke Up fits this description, but like of bands that you've seen and you've tried to give a home to, or you've like seen something in them and you've wanted to push them along, either because their art is great or they're good people, and like, you know, who you've seen go on to that next level that you want to shout out.
I mean, there's so many bands that I love working with that like can't get to that next level for whatever reason that baffles me. Choke Up has been great seeing them grow, and like I've seen them sell out shows at Great Scott. They've gone on tour, but like they can't, I can't say I've seen them go to the level I think they deserve to be at. And that's one of like my biggest regrets, is not figuring out how to get bands to like fame and to be able to do this, you know, more freely without having to use their own resources to do it. We've had some amazing bands that have been able to do it come through places like O'Brien's, and a Pile, I think, is one of the first examples, or Ellen from Palehound. They both got their starts in the basements in Austin and came and played OBs. Pile was on Choke Up's record release show for Black Coffee, Bad Habits. And I had to tell them after that, they couldn't play O'Brien's anymore, because like there was a line around the block and people screaming at me that I couldn't let them into the show. And I love Pile. I think they do such interesting stuff musically. I've seen Pile play to like 10 people at OB's, and then less than a year later, they sell out Great Scott. And then a year later, they sell out Sinclair. Ellen from Palehound, songs blow me away, and tours. Bent Knee, which is a band I fucking love. I don't know if you know Bent Knee. They got to go open like a 2-month tour for Dillinger Escape Plan. And they didn't get their start at O'Brien's, but they were one of those bands that, like, I'm just going to say it, they're a Berkeley band. And when we see Berkeley bands come through O'Brien's, I'm like, fuck. But there's a handful of exceptions to that. Dent, Elizabeth Colorwheel, Berkeley Kids, that band fucking smokes. But Bent Knee, they're like theatrical prog rock. And I can't even express to you like how amazing their live show is. They got fiddle, they got keys, they got one of the best drummers in Gavin, bass player doesn't stop moving, guitar all over the place. Courtney sings, like her voice is amazing. And they've owned the stage every time they played O'Brien's. And to know that they stepped up, like I saw them at a Boston Music Awards, I know them. And I was like, oh my God, it's the kids in Bent Knee. Like, I can't even go up to them. But I could. I texted them the next day or emailed them the next day. I was like, I can't believe I didn't say hi. You know.
Yeah, they're like, what the fuck's wrong with you?
Yeah, no, like, we know you. I saw Rick from Pile at a Great Scott show, like, before they were going on. I was like, hey, Rick, it's Ryan. You know, from O'Brien's? He's like, yeah, I know. But I'm also such a fan of music that like I nerd out about bands sometimes, even though they got their start or like played a shitload of shows at OB's before they like moved up. I'm still like a fan of the band. I still don't necessarily feel like one of them because I'm just a booker, but I love the band. So I want to support them.
I mean, just a booker that's an interesting way to put it, because like, in my experience anyway, the people who are running these places or own these places don't have the vision for the art that's going to bring the crowd. Like you said, with walking to Real Bar and realizing you have an empty place at 9 o'clock at night, like
on a Thursday,
I know what could fill this.
Yeah.
Like that's a skill that you maybe kind of alluded to it. Nobody knows your name until you do something wrong. You're like, why can't I get into this show, Ryan?
It's my fault. I think there's a lot of my faults at OB's, but someone said, like, we don't sing his praise. My praises get sung enough. People on stage thank me more than I've heard anybody else thank a booker. And I'm really appreciative of it, but I don't know how much I deserve it. I'm decent at scheduling. That's always been, like, I have a vision. I can schedule it so things happen on time. I'm not playing an instrument. I'm not putting myself out there the way they are. That, to me, is, like, I don't even know how they do it. I still can't fathom how, like, four bass strings, six guitar strings, and like four pieces of drum kits can make music that is enjoyable, because I've never made it. It's always a cacophonous racket, but yeah.
So, rackets have their place.
I agree. I love a good racket.
I ask what's the biggest horror story that happened at O'Brien's?
Well, in which way? I have a...
Oh, please. More than one is fine. This is...
One of my favorite...
Maybe that doesn't involve that disgusting bathroom.
Well, that was before me by like 10 years. Well, I mean, I went there when...
Still kind of gross, I mean.
It's fine. The bathroom's fine. I've been in much worse bathrooms.
That's very true.
One of my favorite... I'll do two throw-up stories, which these, for whatever reason, are like my two favorite things. We had a new door guy in Christian. I think it was like his first shift, maybe his second. And the show was Big Eyes from New York and the Scamps local band. I don't know what the kid who was hanging out by the door had been drinking, or he recently came in. So he didn't get drunk at O'Brien's. And he's standing there kind of swaying. And Christian's like, I don't know what's up with this kid. And as soon as he lets us know there's something up with this kid, he lets loose fresh Chinese food. And it's a sold out show. So it is crowded at O'Brien's. And then Christian on, again, like second or third shift, has to like break everybody up. The bands don't stop. They're still going. And he's just like mopping and cleaning up this fucking disgusting mess. And no one's any the wiser. But I think that's such a funny thing to... I threw up at an O'Brien show in like 2006. And this kid who was in a band called Shredded Wiener called me Pukey Ryan for like two or three years. But at least I wasn't the person who threw fresh Chinese food all over O'Brien's during a sold out show. The other one... Oh God, now there's so many other shows that are just so bad. Okay, I'm going to do a non-puke one. We did this show. I took some shows for an agent because one of my friends from California had recently signed with this agency. And I was like, I'll do some shows with you so I can get to book Sam. And he brought me these artists that were interesting, pop country, not my usual thing, but I tried to throw some cool bills around him. And one of the shows goes down in infamy as like one of the worst experiences I think I ever had as a booker, where they brought no people to the show, didn't try to even promote the show. Get there and tell me if the show had been at Bright Music Hall, it would have sold out. And I was like, what? Okay, well, let's just have the show. It's fine, and I had a guarantee, and at the end of the night I give them the guarantee, $250, my own pocket, my mistake, I shouldn't have guaranteed it. Looks me dead in the eye and goes, sick, cocaine money, and walks out of the club. And I was just like, are you fucking serious? Like, you don't think that you didn't maybe deserve this and maybe I'll give some of it back? No, cocaine money, runs out of the club.
So he turned food for your child's belly into cocaine.
Well, I didn't have a kid then. So
future food.
Future food. So when they left all their merch, and then me and the staff just had a little bonfire in the back of OB's. So we maybe got our money's worth, is I guess what I'm saying. But that to me was like, I put together local acts that were very similar that just didn't draw well either. It was just a bummer of a show. And that person acted like a fucking asshole, made me feel real shitty.
So you burnt their shit down.
So we set it all on fire. Nice. Safe.
As a
safer. A heartwarming end to this story.
Well, I think in Brighton, as long as you're cooking, you can have an outdoor fire. So you just throw a hot dog on it here.
We were just warming up the grill at 1 o'clock in the morning. That's all we were doing. Had to feed the staff meal.
Let me bring you to a positive place. Okay, so it's tomorrow, you've got nothing to do, no responsibility. Tonight, magically, no restriction, we're booking an imaginary show and you get to go to it and you don't have to be responsible for it. We're just going to pick it, you know, out of a hat here, throw it out there and say, this is the show that I would like to be at, like the re-entry into rock and roll kind of show.
This might
take us some time to get to the end of it, considering your line of work. But I'd be curious if you had a couple ideas for what would go on in a show like this, even where it would go on.
I wish I could have done a last show at Great Scott. I think that's a real hard loss for me. Just I spent more time at Great Scott than like any other club outside of O'Brien's.
Yeah, RIP that disgusting bathroom.
Not a great bathroom.
No.
It was New Year's
Eve.
The
location was really my issue with that.
With the bathroom, having to walk through the whole crowd?
You have to like fight through the whole crowd.
Yeah. Some of my shows, we didn't have to fight anybody because no one was there. But I think I would love to have seen Choke Up again at Great Scott. I think I would love to see any show. Sinclair is probably going to be like my first. I can't imagine a better show to see first than to be at Sinclair, because that's like my number two favorite venue next to Great Scott. Again, I'd love to see Choke Up. Love to see Tied to a Bear, Save Ends, Fucko, Depressors, Clever Girls. And then Puppy Problems and Eggy Benedict. So that's like a big, I'll just book a festival.
I sell Saturday, like, you know, yeah. Saturday 12, all day.
12 band show. I don't know. There's too many bands. Like I was so used to seeing 3 to 4 shows a week, depending on the week. I just love so many of the bands in Boston. So Choke Up, Fucko, Tied to a Bear, Save Ends, Puppy Problems, Eggy Benedict. Who'd I leave out? Depressors. That was it. It was Depressors and Clever Girls. Cool.
This is good. You're making our playlist that we share right now as I write all these things down. So thank you.
No problem.
Doing our work for us. Booking our playlists.
Cool.
That's right. The Sinclair is a great venue. And it's funny because I think that if you were to ask me independently, I'd have said like Great Scott is the like emotional home of my favorite venue. And Sinclair is like, this is actually a comfortable place to see a show.
As a short person, sometimes I'm in the back and it's not the best place to see the show, but I know I'm short. I know I don't deserve to be up front.
You don't deserve to be tall.
Yeah, but there's like places you can go there and like lift you up a little bit too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I love going to the upper deck if I'm not going to be hitting it up. But sometimes that's not open.
So. I've noticed a couple years ago, I went to GABF, Great American Beer Fest, and Paul Bearer and Propagandhi were playing around. Not at the same show, but they were playing while we were out there. So me and my friend Matt went to both of these shows. Probably should have been doing more work stuff, but hey, whatever. And both of the shows were in venues that were like, that had stepped like risers going up and down. So like the entire, it was like they took all the seats out, and they probably did take all the seats out of this theater that was at this grade and then just like box it out. So if you were short, you had like front rows at each level of it. It was really smart.
That's awesome.
And he and I are tall, so we were standing at the back of one of them in the middle, and kids kept walking up to try to exit between us, and they'd be like, excuse me. We're like, there's like a rail here, and you can't. That was the one downside. People just kept being like, excuse me, bro. I'm like, yeah, you can't.
This is a rail.
Some you tall pricks, get out of my way.
That's how I feel at all these shows. I'm hiding in the back. I guess as a short person in Great Scott, there are angles you could have found there.
Places you could stand. I never had a problem with Great Scott. I thought also I have a little bit more like notoriety there, so I was allowed a little bit of certain leeway of where I could stand, which probably benefited me sometimes. I don't know. I mean, that was like
moseying up next to the soundboard.
I could do that. That's easy. But like standing in the doorway, and because sometimes you'd stand, I love to see the whole crowd reacting to the music, and I'd stand where you're not really allowed to stand unless you work there. And just watch the whole set from there. And it sounds so fucking, it would sound so good. That's the thing. I think underrated, like that was my favorite sounding venue in the city. Like, it just, it sounded great because you would have the loud music, but you could also hear the people making the music. I don't know, a huge loss. But
yeah,
that was
the way Great Scott was set up. Just the length of it made it such a perfect, like, sounding. If it was, you know, too loud, you can just stand in the back and it sounded perfect.
You wouldn't even need earplugs. You can have a conversation. I don't know. It was perfect, almost a perfect venue.
Yeah.
Pour one out.
Yeah. Yeah. That was definitely a loss. I don't know what the status of the station there in Alston is right now. But
I don't know either.
Here's hoping.
I know they're working hard, and fingers crossed. I think we'll know, you know, we'll have some updates soon. Carl's a hard worker. Carl's one of the best. I think he does. I don't know if I give him enough credit for helping me out for all those years, but mostly because in person, me and Carl are like, hey, go fuck yourself. Oh, it's this guy again. I got to see you. I can't believe I got to hang out with you again. And then in reality, like, we like each other a lot. Or I hope he likes me a lot. It'd be weird if he didn't. But we've purchased many a beer for each other over the years. I'll say that.
This is actually ostensibly a beer podcast.
You should probably have Carl on someday.
Yeah, we should have Carl. So we'll ask him if he likes you. That'll be our lead off question.
That guy, forget
another it. One question guest.
That's two so far.
Well, I was gonna ask both of you if you could ascribe to notable Boston venues a beer that embodies that venue in some capacity. Right. Well, I mean, for me, I'll give you, for whatever reason, probably from hanging out with Mr. Azilius here, like Coors Banquet and OB's to me is like, here's a standby venue. Here's a standby beer. Always good. Right down the middle. It is what you asked for. And I feel like that does typify the feeling of that place. And I would say on the other side, I hope I don't ruffle any feathers. I'm just going to speak like a glitter beer would be for me, Royale, a show that ends at like 10 because the club is coming on later. And, it's really big when you don't want it to be really big. And it's just ostentatious and strange, even though I got my vaccine in that building. So big ups, Royale.
I like Royale. I saw Against Me at Royale. I was like, oh, I forgot this isn't that bad, but I had a Goose Island IPA at that Against Me show. That might've been one of the worst beers I've ever had in my entire life. Just tastes like drinking a bar of soap. So I'd like to, even though that's a Royale, that's what I would attribute to House of Blues. Rough. I can't get comfortable in that venue. I've never been comfortable there. I don't think the sound is that good. And I don't think it's any part of the sound team that works there. I think they have crews come in with the bands who don't know the room and think, I got the sound. And it sounds like shit 90% of the time. And the beer's overpriced, and they've always been so hospitable to me, and I'm never going to get to do anything there again because I said this, but I just don't like that room, so I'm going to give it a Goose Island IPA.
I do have a memory of spending too much money to see Run the Jewels there and then not being able to actually see them because I was not on the floor for that show, and I couldn't like get to the front of any of the mezzanines.
Like, I got stuck at the Bouncing Soul second level, couldn't see shit, was just like, I'm fucking leaving. I'm going to go put the record on. It's going to sound better than standing here not seeing anything. Terrible layout.
Very strange. Very strange. And I don't know, it probably is rosier now in hindsight, but I do have fond memories of Avalon and Axis, having seen many great shows there. Those were, again, shows that ended at a specific time because club night started. I remember specifically Modest Mouse there, like the club crowd came in, caught Float On, and then they went to the floor, and then we left because that was the end of the show.
I saw Alkaline Trio do God Damn It Start to Finish at Avalon. I spent $88 at the bar during their set, or like $90, whatever it was, which is way too much, and then pissed myself on the tee on the way home because I hadn't used the bathroom after drinking all those beers. So there's like a fun when I was a mess story to share.
So we're going to give that a 40-ounce of some kind. Maybe a St. Ide malt liquor for Avalon Access.
I loved the Avalon. The first time I saw Catch-22. So good.
Wow.
I think it was Avalon. I can't remember if it was Avalon or Axis. I saw Fantomas and Mel Banana. That was a show.
Mel Banana. That was exciting. I saw Mel Banana at the Space in Worcester in 96, 97. I don't remember. And I was just like, what the fuck is this? And they, I don't even know. I love Mel Banana, but as like a young 16, 17 year old, that shit will blow your mind. I don't know who's doing that kind of stuff these days besides like them.
I honestly don't know. I mean, Mike Patton has put out like 3 records in the last year and they're all like, I mean, like the Tomahawk record sounds like a Tomahawk record. It's not that weird. He does have a record reading Italian recipes and singing, I guess. So that's that, but that was several years old at this point. So who's doing it?
I don't know.
Who's bringing the weird?
Elizabeth Color Wheel, if they're still doing it. For sure. And then what do you,
so what other venues, Oz? What do you, can you do fill in one here? I know you've been to all these places.
I have been to all these places. Let's see. Sinclair, I guess, give me like, you know, they serve, what the heck is that brewery out in Orange, Mass? Honest Wait, that beer, they do that Grisaille that they serve at Sinclair. And I'm going to match it to Sinclair because Sinclair felt like such a breath of fresh air when it came here as a venue to go to and like be able to go to. And that's what that Grisaille is, a beer that no one makes a style like that anymore, but it's just so crisp and delicious. And so I'm going to go with that. I'm going to match that to that, even though I don't feel like they probably don't sell that beer anymore, but because no one buys that style of beer except for me, but you know.
Oh, I think when I think of Sinclair, I think of the house, the Jack's Abbey House Lager, because that's like the only place that I regularly went to that had that for the same price as Narragansett. So not that I don't love Narragansett, but I don't get the House Lager a lot of places. So that would be my drink of choice when I'm at Sinclair. And I know,
fine pick.
I know that Jack's Abbey sponsors this, so I felt like I appreciate the money that just went into my bank account for saying that.
They don't sponsor it. We just work for them. We're not getting paid for this.
I'm kidding. But you were the one who was like, hey, we have that over at Sinclair now. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get, this is refreshing and nice. And it's everything you want in a beer while you're watching a show.
It was really nice because the last time the Thermals came to town, I was able to go there and be like, hey, Adam, the beer buyer there, can I buy a case of House Lager and bring it to the Thermals? He's like, fuck yeah, go ahead.
Booking shows for as long as I have, I've done 3 shows with Sinclair, maybe, and I've never been treated so kindly in my entire, like that staff, that venue knows how to do it. They treat people like people. And I've walked into some rooms and people, who the fuck are you? Like they literally say that when you walk into a room. And I walked into Sinclair like, how can we help you? Like, what are we doing? Do you want to like come to this room and like hang out for a little bit, have a snack and a beer? Here's a meal card. Why don't you just like have a nice easy night? I'm like, I'm supposed to be working. They're like, we got you.
You need a foot rub or anything?
I feel like that was on the table at one point. Like they just are so, they were so nice and they treat everybody so well. And I have bands that are like, we've now played the Sinclair. You have to treat us as good as they treat us. And I'm like, fuck, I don't have that budget. But
getting hot dogs off the rollers. That's all you're getting for a meal.
I would bring in pizza. When I came back from Europe tour with Tied to a Bear, I was bringing full meals for bands and leaving them on the bar and no one ever fucking ate it. So I stopped. But
I would have
eaten. Well, you know, I was about to just jump in and say, you book our band, we'll come eat your food.
There we go.
That's what we'll do. We're not going to fill the room, okay?
No.
And, you know, it'd be nice if we had some cocaine money, but... I will eat your pizza, sir.
You can have the food. Absolutely.
Fantastic. I didn't want to go around insulting venues by comparing it to beers, but
I certainly did. I certainly wanted to
insult the house. That's how you went into that. I would say for me, and I have said it before, but Great Scott to me will always be like Smutty Nose Old Brown Dog.
What
like,
a fucking good beer.
I would. The only place I know that I ever saw it on draft.
O'Brien's
reliably. O'Brien's as well.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, when O'Brien's reopens, I will, for some reason, I probably, again, because I'm with Oz, I'm drinking Coors Banquet beers at O'Brien's.
And that's like a sneaky, like, fuck you up beer. Like, you don't realize how strong it is until you've had like four or five of them. And you're like, shit, that's actually too many of these. We had a couple come in before a show one time and had like three La Fin du Mans each.
Oof.
I know. And they went to go get their fourth, and Ryan, the bartender, was like, you realize how strong these are, right? And they're like, no. And he's like, I don't
know. You will soon.
You will soon, but you might want to switch to something light. And so they were like, they realized, and then they were like, we'll have the notch session pills. We'll balance it out. We'll go real light. So, yeah.
As part of our, what our production team does, they get to occasionally research a historical style and brew it and share it with the team. And last week's was a malt liquor.
Oh.
And I had a real, real packed day on Saturday that was supposed to end in going to the Revolution game where my friends were tailgating. And I didn't have time to tailgate, but I had time to like quickly drink one of these 8% beers at 16 ounce cans as I walked in. And I was like, immediately like, whoa, hey, that shit worked. So Fin du Mans will do the same thing.
Oh, absolutely. And as someone who like mostly drank Miller Lite, because you're drinking again for like hours straight, you put a 6 or 7% beer in my hand, I'm going to drink it the same way I drink the Miller Lite. And then I'm realizing each one of these is 2 Miller Lites. Okay. Each one of these is 3 Miller Lites. And then you're just like, well, my day is completely fucked tomorrow. But I've done all right. Yeah. Matt, now do you remember, what would you say the Abbey was when the Abbey existed? Like, what beer would the Ooh. Abbey Lounge at Somerville be? Because that's where we met many, many, many years ago.
It's very true. I mean, the Abbey is like, I mean, it's like Miller High Life in all the best ways possible. Like, it's just, you know, it's for everybody. It's chuggable. You think it's really, you're really sophisticated while you're in the Abbey listening to, you know, garage bands and stuff, but it's just pounding high lives.
Pounding high lives. Yeah. I mean, I can't disagree with that. I think that's the right call.
And it's not quite the same, but PA's Lounge is just somehow Coke, then new Coke. It went from awesome with the wall to just utter garbage to whatever it is now.
Jerry at PA's has always treated me really good. He once overheard me say, the only reason I book shows in Boston is so I can get one free beer when I walk into any bar in the city. And from that point on, he always bought me one beer whenever he seen me. I love that they have the PA's Brew, which is the rotating, whatever the cheapest, this is, I'm giving an industry secret away. I think it's like whatever the cheapest.
I think they would give that secret away.
So like sometimes you'd be drinking Rolling Rock. Sometimes it's Bush. Sometimes it's Bush Light. So I'm going to say PA's Lounge, Bush Light.
That's fair. Jerry was like a sweetheart. He just was like the best guy. I was just gonna say, he feels like he's someone who should have been like running a VFW, and like somehow like Ryan keeps booking punk shows there. He's like, why do these kids keep showing up? But I'm gonna take care of them.
That's kind of what he basically, that's what it is.
I was gonna mention a very sad trip down memory lane I took recently, where the band I was in, after I had left the band, played a show at PA's Lounge, and they were still storing stuff in my basement in Alston. They came back from the show furious with one another, may have precipitated the end of this band. Half the band had gotten drunk and punched a hole in the wall, and the other half had gotten angry about it, and then the venue had gotten angry about it, and everyone had denied that it happened. And our friend Nick, who was in Taste of Silver, had booked the show and went on return to the pit to like basically be like, who did this? I know it wasn't the guys in this band because they're my friends. And then the guys in that band had to be like, yeah, sorry about that. That was was us.
Ooh.
So not a great look. And that, all of that still exists in a form as trolling through that, being like, oof, wow. That hurts. That hurts to see.
I feel like I remember that happening. I feel like I remember there was like a PA's hole in the wall controversy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I can't say that I was involved in it, but I saw the direct aftermath of it, and I know the particulars and the principles. And yeah, I mean, all right, I guess it's RIP PA's Lounge at this point.
Union Tavern.
Union Tavern. Yes, sorry, that I cannot remember the name of. I passed that on my bike like several times in the past month, and I cannot remember the name of it when I see it. It's just like in and out.
It'll be PA's forever.
Yeah, it really should. It is. So.
Well,
there's a, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead,
Jim. I was going to talk about Good Times Emporium in Somerville.
I fucking used to love Good Times, though. What
Good Times fucking, was the best.
What a crazy, what a crazy thing that that place even existed. Like,
they booked a hardcore show and a memoriam for a kid who got killed on his motorcycle at the same night.
What a smart decision on their end. I
never understood that. Maybe we played it. The memorial, I don't know, someone can correct me on this, but there was some, there was like a, you know, a PowerPoint of the kid's life going for most of the evening.
Oh, I've had so many fucked up lovely experiences in that place. I just $2 margaritas, $2 like Mama Celeste pizzas, all you can play video games, and then while you're drinking all that, hey, by the way, do you want to do bumper cars or race go-karts? Yeah. Yeah, I fucking do. And then I'm going to play Simpsons arcade games and go to the batting cages blind drunk. Like, the fact that they allowed that place to even open blew my mind.
Are we coming back around to puke stories? I feel like this is leading to a puke story.
I never had that. I just met real interesting characters every time I was there in the... They had the cigarette smoking room, which was technically outside, but like not really outside.
There's like a window.
Oh, like that back alley at the Sill.
It was worse than the back alley at the Sill, but like, I don't even know. It was definitely just like a room and they put like vents in the ceiling. We're like, this is a smoking lounge. I just sitting there just being like, you guys are crazy. This is a weird place to be right now. Because everyone was like, oh, I'm so fucking pissed. Or like, I'm going to kill that guy tonight. And I'd just be like, just relax. We're good times. It's good times. Just what a strange thing that we all got to experience that no one
will
know. Now it's Papagayo and Outback Steakhouse.
Is that
just as cool?
Assembly Row.
I was trying to think of where it was, but Assembly Row. You're right. Yeah, yeah.
Because it was going to be the IKEA. It used to be IKEA Way.
Oh, that's right.
But like, we celebrated birthday parties there. My friend had a bachelor party there. That was we had a lot of fun in Somerville at Good Times.
A lot of good times were had.
A lot of good times, bad, good times, bad times. One.
Put them all together.
It was the best.
I'm trying to think of other places. I did go to a show in I think 2019 at the Hardcore Stadium in Cambridge. Thinking of like places you can book halls, that's a place you can see Infest and Converge and pay $3 for a beer.
I mean, I love the Elks. Norman, I think, over there has been really kind to me and giving me rides home, and I booked a handful of shows. I did a great Iron Sheik pew 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 show there many years ago.
Oh wow.
I've been doing shows at the Elks, Cambridge Elks. I don't use Hardcore Stadium. That's Jimmy Flynn's name for it. I always say Cambridge Elks or Massasoit Elks, Cambridge. But they've just always been so good to me and us idiot punk kids. So I always try to give them, when I have a decent show that needs an all ages crowd, throw it to them. And because I know all us adults will give plenty of money at the bar. And I think the room rate, $300 at the time, was reasonable. If you can get 30 kids at $10, the rest of the money goes to the bands. You get 100 kids in there. That's pretty good. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was like stepping back in time for me, because I was like, I had never been to that venue before.
Oh.
So it was completely new to me, at least to my memory anyway. And, you know, I'm walking in like, this is what we used to do when we were like 17.
It's the best.
And except there's a bar in the basement.
Yeah. I always did shows in the basement. I never did the upstairs shows. My shows weren't big enough. But those downstairs basement shows, it's a wild time. Iron Sheik had a van that couldn't go reverse. So to like parallel park in Cambridge, not the easiest thing in the world. You couldn't park in the parking lot, so they pulled up, and then we all pushed the van out back into on Bishop Allen. And of course, there's a ton of fucking cars trying to get through because it's like Friday night in Central Square, and we're all just pushing this van backwards so that we can get to the highway. I don't know. Good times. Good times.
Well,
I feel like you were going somewhere, Oz. You keep welling.
No, well, it just keep.
You have a thing.
I don't have a thing necessarily.
No, you're just you're stalling.
Yeah,
stalling for that sweet, sweet conclusion.
Mm. We have been talking for an hour now, and okay. Ryan did blow his end of our podcast story at the very beginning. So,
oh God, no, you're right.
You know, this is just going to go on endlessly now.
Oh no, I ruined it. My legs are falling asleep, so.
That's it. That's how we end our legs. We do this until our legs cannot
until they fall off. Till literally the blood
cut me off at the hips. Throw me in the river. I don't know what river, but we'll figure it out.
Hey, how can people support what you do in booking shows? Is it going to shows? Is it following you on Twitter?
It's going to shows. Do not follow me on Twitter, although I am very good at Twitter. I don't think you have to do that. You can find me at RTT Presents there. Definitely just go to shows. Don't just go to my show. Go to any show that interests you. Support the bands, support the artists, support the venues. I think that's the biggest thing you can do as a fan of music is just keep supporting those who are making you happy. Throw it back to them because they're mostly working selflessly. No one's really making a living off of this these days. So even those little things that you think are little exchanges are going to mean huge things to those bands.
Yeah, even just, you know, on a personal level, just, you know, when a band gets a compliment, they just genuinely appreciate it and remember it for so long.
Absolutely. Almost did that weird abso-fucking-lutely thing. no, I mean, like, just say thanks. That show ruled. Man, I love that set. Hey, I could watch that every day. I don't know. Just be kind to the bands, the people. That's it.
Awesome.
That is very solid advice. I can't wait to do that at an RTTP show.
It sucks because Return of the Pit and RTT Presents have the same call letters. I love Aaron, but we both had to end up with that, which is, I think, caused him more headaches than me, to be honest. But
what is he doing nowadays? I see him posting pictures from shows from back in the day. I don't know if he's
dying to get out and take photos again. I love that we have Return to the Pit in New England, and it's not necessarily shows that I go to, but it's just so amazing to have that document of the world that we live in musically. Specifically, I mean, Aaron does like hardcore metal, some punk, but you can go back and look at shows from like 15 years ago and just see the whole crowd. Nobody, I don't think other scenes have that. So shout out to Aaron at Return to the Pit for doing it for so long and doing it so well.
Hell yeah.
All right.
Well, that feels good. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you for inviting
having beers with us.
First podcast. I hope it was okay.
I think it was great. Fantastic.
Oh, well, and thank you, Matt, for the beer. I really appreciate it. I'm drinking the Winter Hill Frequency now, but I'll be enjoying some of those Jack's Abbeys soon.
I hope you do.